Oh, thanks.
I'll give it to you during the interview.
So who are you? And talk to me. Forget about the camera, all that stuff.
Sure.
Talk to me. There you go. So who are you?
So I'm Shishir Marotra. I run the product planning team for WinFS. I'll tell you a little bit about what we've been doing here.
WinFS? I thought that team was killed or something.
That's a good question.
I've been hearing rumors.
I'll let Quentin talk to some of that.
All right. Yeah. So what do you do?
Oh, I run product planning, so it means I do a lot of the forward-looking research for what we're going to do with WinFS. We build a lot of the demos, do a lot of the sort of marketing and evangelism work for making sure people understand what WinFS is and take their feedback and make sure we get into the product and so on.
Very cool. And we have a couple other guys here. Who are you?
I'm Quinn Clark. I run the program management team for WinFS.
Okay. And...
Hi, Sam Drucker. I run the development team for WinFS's programming surface, schema, APIs, query.
Very cool. And you've been on Channel 9 before.
I've been on Channel 9 talking about WinFS before, in fact.
Excellent. So how much, since that last interview, that was a year ago?
Or a year and a half, I think.
A year and a half ago. How much has changed? Who wants to talk to that?
A lot.
Well,
first of all, we have...
Bits.
Yep.
Wow.
Beta 1 bits.
Excellent.
Just for you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So we've released Beta 1. So since the PC of 03, where we started talking about WinFS with customers, we learned a ton, right? First, we had to figure out how the WinFS rolled around unifying storage for relational data and file system data, et cetera, related to how data gets integrated in enterprises as a whole. And even though we're not talking about that a whole lot here today, we're really going to show the progress on WinFS, so the client excitement, innovation, that kind of stuff. At the PC, we're going to talk a lot about that problem space and what it means to integrate data in a much broader way. So that's one thing we've done. The other thing we've done is just make a lot of progress on the code. In integrated storage, we've been pursuing as a company for 10, 11, 12 years.
I was at the Windows NT Developer Conference where Bill talked about Cairo in, what, 93?
Certainly it's been a while. And the industry as a whole has sort of looked at this problem at least that long, if not longer.
Yeah.
And so we've been working on the bits and trying to get it right. I mean, we are going to replace the file system forever. And it's been around for a while. People are familiar with it. They understand it. It's a pretty well-proven technology. So as a replacement, we've got to be super careful. I'm fond of telling people, you know, I have little toddlers, little guys, and they'll never know anything about WinFS if we do this right, right? If we get the technology right, we introduce it correctly, developers like it, they use it, my kids will never know anything different. So the sort of the excitement and responsibility of that is pretty great. So we've been working on building the right thing for a couple years now.
Right. Now, some of what was exciting about WinFS was better search scenarios, right? Better search, better desktop search kind of thing. But since you guys showed me that stuff a year and a half ago, there's been desktop search stuff.
Yeah, Windows
right?
Vista, yes.
Well, there's been desktop search. I mean, Kubernetes, Google shipped a desktop search, MSN shipped desktop search, and Windows Vista has desktop search that's really nice.
Yeah, that's been part of it.
So what does WinFS bring to the world that desktop search doesn't have yet?
That's a great question. So... You know, back in the PC, we talked a lot about search because it was something that was very understandable for people, something that people would latch onto right away. But the truth of the matter is the heart of WinFS is about storage. It's about data access. It's about being a platform, which search really isn't, right? I mean, search will answer questions like, show me all the documents with Scoble somewhere in the world. It won't answer questions like, show me all the mail I received from Scoble in the past 6 months that I never answered, but I have a meeting to follow up with him sometime in the next month. Search will never answer that question. You need a relational database. You need to have the power of a relational query engine somewhere to answer those kinds of questions. Further, you need to have data that's schematized. So at the heart of WinFS, I always talk about really two things. One that stool should work.
Yeah, thank you.
you know, one of the hearts is really around unifying data. So what does it mean to have Windows understand what a contact is, what a calendar item is, what a document is, what a annotation is, what a list is, etc., and then that every app can use, that every developer can take advantage of. It enables really sort of easy scenarios, easy to imagine scenarios like Amazon, say instead of, you know, you go out, it's Mother's Day, you buy a gift, you fill out the form field today, who's your mom, what's her address, all that stuff. Instead of that world, Amazon could just bring up the Windows People Picker and you click on your mom and it gets the rest out of that contact object, out of the system. You don't have to fill out forms.
Right.
So it's easy to imagine easy scenarios like that. more difficult things to kind of visualize, because it really takes, you know, years of developers adopting and advanced technology, are things like the example I gave you where, you know, show me all the stuff that I haven't answered to yet that I need to go and deal with. Or, you know, I'm interested in this project over there, and I just want to enlist in some sort of awareness of that project. So I want to have access to the mails that have been sent around it, or the documents that have been written, or whatever, but I don't necessarily want to have to go to all these SharePoint sites every day to see what's changed. I want to be able to build rules around some of my data so that I can, you know, understand when things have changed, when I should be notified of stuff, etc. I want to be able to build reusable organization so that I can create a list of things that I care about, like, for example, show me all the specifications we're doing for Beta 2. Just give me that list. Now I want to take that list and I want to apply it to you know, these particular people. So I want to see just the specifications that this particular group of people are working on, because I'm interested in this particular, you know, group's work. Or take that list and apply it to this technology area. So show me all of our specifications that interface with full text search, for example. So I can go through those and pull those out and give it to, you know, our partners over in the full text search world.
Right.
Those kind of scenarios aren't really possible today, and they're not really possible just with search. So WinFS really is about unifying data, providing ways to organize and explore data, and provide new innovation capabilities for developers. Right?
Right.
So in the end, this is really a platform, a data platform for developers.
This makes me wonder if it's going to be the new registry. In other words, the registry makes it hard for me to move all my stuff from one computer to another computer.
Well,
in my apps.
The good news, you know, this sort of comment comes up a lot about what I'm about to say. The good news is it's 2005. And in other words, we know so much now. Like, if we were developing this, say, 10 years ago, where the problems of distributed computing and running from servers and this kind of stuff weren't understood by anybody yet, much less, you know, much less by Windows, then, yeah, we'd run that risk of, oh, no, like, now I've done this thing here, and now it's not over there, and it's not deployable in enterprises, it's not reusable by my home machine, etc. So we've built technology from the ground up to be inherently, you know, more distributable. So we have synchronization services that we've built in from the very beginning, from the very lowest layers, so we can deal with multi-master scenarios, so data can live in more than one places. This is something that fortunately, because when we started the project, you know, we knew we had to solve some of the scenarios right from the very beginning.
Right.
But in terms of the registry, you know, eventually, you know, we think there's a good reason to put that kind of data in a system like WinFS. I mean, you go and deal with some of the pain points in today's registry, and you can imagine that having a more database-like engine underneath there would help a lot of that stuff out.
But right.
That's not a short-term goal. I mean, our short-term goals really are give developers a platform for innovation, provide them the capability of giving end users new tools, new power, new you know, ways to be productive, and, you know, take the technology from there.
Now, how is my mom going to get WinFS?
Well, you know what?
I'm going to get it by getting a CD, right?
And I know you'll play with it, yeah.
But, so, first of all, how are developers going to get it? And how are we going to distribute it to the world?
Yeah, Beta 1 is a subscription MSDN download. So it's a limited beta in Beta 1. Subsequent betas will open up a little bit more publicly. The answer to your how's your mom going to get a question, it always crushes the team when I say this, but I hope your mom never really knows what WinFS is. You know what I mean? Like, should she really know that right now it's NTFS and not FAT32?
No.
No, she shouldn't know that, right? Similarly, if we ever have to teach her there's such a thing as a relational database engine somewhere in her system, we've probably messed something up, right?
Yeah.
And this is a mantle I carry from sort of previous jobs of, you know, there's going to be 200 million users, there's going to be zero DBAs, the database will not surface anywhere to an end user. So, you know, what apps pick up WinFS? Obviously, you know, we have internal projects that we're working on that I'm not going to talk about now. We'll make more progress with those over time. But the other one is ISVs that we're working with who are going to adopt it. The way she's going to get it, one day she'll get some new version of some app, or she'll download something that someone's talked to her about that's really interesting, and it'll just use it. And that's the way the ecosystem will start, is that multiple apps will start to take advantage of the core system and start to reuse other apps' as data and organization constructs, etc. And suddenly she'll find a more coherent world without ever understanding that this big, you know, underlying file system technology had to evolve in order to do it.
Right.
So just get more capable.
How big is the distributable then? Or how
30
big
megs.
30 megs.
30 megs.
Yeah. We're targeting about 30, 40 megs, even at RTM,
downloaded,
which we think, you know, given the world of automatic Windows updates that happen overnight and stuff, is not a deployment blocker for us in any way, shape, or form.
Well, developers still care about that because it's still 30 megs of stuff that they have to deliver with. You know, their 2 meg app, and it is a blocker for a lot of people on the street. I keep hearing that over and over about even .NET today.
We have that same exact challenge. So we're hoping to do the same things that .NET has done in terms of OEM pre-install and make sure it's part of Windows Update and that kind of stuff. But you know, we know that's still the hurdle. And you know, obviously the goal is not in Windows Vista, but in subsequent Windows releases, it'll just be there.
Right.
So at that point, we get the kind of ubiquity that developers need from us.
Right.
You do some demos?
Yeah,
definitely do some demos.
It's hard to think about what it is.
Let's really show what the bits kind of enable.
Cool. All right, so I was going to actually start by, Quentin talked through these value propositions for WinFS, Unify, Organize, Explore, Innovate. So we actually have these posters up here that we use internally for people to try and get a sense of what these pieces mean. And so we talk about WinFS in these four different ways, and I'll use this to walk through the demo.
Okay. Let me just explore. Hey. All right. Looking posters.
So the way to think about this is, so WinFS is the new relational file system. We're rebuilding a file system on top of a database. And so why would you ever bother to build a file system on top of a database? Well, I'm going to walk through why you would in a few different parts. So let's start with Unify. So one of the key things about databases and file systems is they store different types of data. So in file systems, you store file streams, they're big blobs, but in databases, I can store rows, they're schematized, they're available, so on. So first value proposition for WinFS is bring together the types of data I can store.
Okay.
Yeah, let me get rid of that. So here we're on a machine that is running XPSP2, and I think Quentin actually...
Wait. This isn't a Windows Vista machine?
It's not a Windows Vista machine. So one of the other big changes from PDC03 is we decided to go ahead and take WinFS down level as well. It took us a little bit longer to make sure that we could, and took some extra work on our part, but now we're confident we can get it to work on XP. The bits we're making available for Beta 1 will work on XP. It's a pretty big piece of news. I think it'll make it a lot easier.
How do you know that?
Pretty excited about that.
Very cool.
So you'll install WinFS, and the first thing you'll see is WinFS stores, and they look sort of like volumes.
Okay.
So if I click into these, let me make this window a little bigger. We'll install a certain set of stores for you by default. So there's one called the default store, and this has a bunch of data in it. And right now I'm just going through the normal sort of file system view of your data, just to show all my data is in the same place. And here I come into this folder called My Data, and I just built this folder this morning. And it's just got a bunch of different data types here. So you'll notice it has some of the standard things, like it's got documents and JPEGs, and it's got MHT somewhere in an Excel file. But it's also got these things like mail messages, and it's got contacts, and it's got group tags and annotations. And some of these things are really files, and they're there as file streams. And some of these things are rows and tables somewhere. Right.
Yeah.
And the important thing is that the two things sort of intermix, and you can sort of work all of those things at once. And one of the big pieces of work we did is to make sure that existing applications still work against this data. So I'm going to do a piece of this demo, which is probably not very exciting for most people, but there's a handful of file system people out there that will be really excited about this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to double-click on the Word doc, and Word, if it all works, is magically going to open. And I know it's not a huge demo, but for us this was a huge turning point. And, you know, Quentin talked a lot about all these integrated storage efforts that have happened through the years. This has been a constant challenge, matching the bar in terms of providing fully backwards compatible Win32
access. So that Word doc is inside WinFS.
Right, it's sitting inside, essentially inside a database, and Word has no idea that it's looking at a database. It just thinks it's a file system. So that means that all my data can continue to work here on par with how it does today, and all your WinFS capabilities will be in addition to your Win32 capabilities, not instead of. And we think that's a very big part about making sure it really is a file system.
Okay.
So that's cool. Let's get rid of Word. All right, so I have all this data. It's in one place. It's kind of nice to see it this way. But the real advantage of having it in a database is about organizations, about relationships. One of the things that file systems do a bad job of is that file systems really think files and folders, and it's really the only relationship they understand. Databases can do much more than that. So sort of show that off, I'm going to bring up another application.
Okay.
This one is called LifeJournal. So this is actually an application that was built as a prototype by one of our developers, sort of in his extra time, ended up being one of these showcase prototype applications for us. And the idea here is that it takes all your different data and it puts it across time, and it puts this notion of bands, which are, you can think of sort of as categories, right? And the first thing you'll notice here is there are no folders. All my data is essentially in this big soup, and I can sort of slice and dice it in multiple different ways.
Okay.
But I can also use this to go and do innovative things with relationships. So, for example, let me go and crack open this band.
Whoa.
it's a very beautiful application. So this is actually...
You know it's a cool app, and I have to back up.
Surprise, Robert!
Sorry, I should have warned you. Yeah, the app moves fast, so I'll try and keep it slow so it doesn't disrupt people. But the idea here is I have all this different data. It's laid out in time. In this case, this is actually data about we had our kitchen redone. Here are some different pictures of the kitchen when it finished. Here are some pictures of when it started, and I can go sort of navigate my data this way, but I can also do rich things like relate data together. So I can actually take this thing and say that's related to, related to that one, and related to that one, related to that one, and then when I go and look at this piece of data, it'll show me these are all the items that are related to that one. I can say preview all related items, and I can start to see that my data is actually living in a web of data, where I've got one piece relates to another piece, relates to another piece, and so on.
Now this looks a lot like tagging to me. How is this more powerful than like what Flickr does on photo tagging, or
That's a great question. I'm going to answer it in sort of a few different ways. It's such a powerful concept. It's sort of like the analogy we make is if you think of a database and you try to name one scenario for why people have multiple tables and they have relationships across them, there's no way you could really do it. So I'm going to give you a few different ones to give you a flavor of why relationships are way more powerful than just tags. And the most important piece is that they're actually structured. They have meaning. Right? It's not something that I just go and say, hey, this thing's a picture of Robert and that thing's a picture of Quentin. It actually is meaning that that's a picture of Robert and I can go do things with that data. Right?
Okay.
So for example here, if we built this one sample that says, let me take these, here, let me zoom in a little bit more, grab a set of pictures. So I can actually grab a set of things here. And so I have this problem all the time where I have a lot of data. And I've taken pictures, I've taken hundreds of pictures of the same thing. What I really want is I just want to keep one of the pictures and the rest of them I want to kind of hide away.
Yeah.
Right? So here I can go and say, take all these pictures and say, this one, that's representative of all the others. I'm going to call it make representative. And now it shows up here and it's got this little thing behind it saying there's three pictures behind this one. And if I flip back down here, I'll see these are all other pictures that this is representative of. Right? And the idea is that I've got this relationship that says these pictures aren't contained with each other, they're not tagged together or anything. It's actually a real relationship that says these things are representative of those things. But I'm going to give you a better example in just a moment here.
It's also worth noting that those relationships are exposed as part of the data, so other apps can reuse them.
Right.
So if I want to go look at my photos in like a photo app, not necessarily this sort of digital memory management kind of an app, then you get that same representation, you get those same relationships. They're completely reusable everywhere else. So you can take them and reapply them to other data sets or see them in other places, where that's not really necessarily true with tagging. Especially as you start tagging really complex things. So you have these hierarchies of tags and all this stuff becomes a soup that's as unmanageable as your files are today in folders. So having relationships that are then explorable and constructs, not only in the data but in the programming language, suddenly it opens these things up.
Right.
Much different ways.
Right. One thing, if I'm sharing this store on my network with, let's say, somebody who doesn't have WinFS, what do they see?
It looks like a file system. So just like Word saw it as a file system, it actually sees a path. We actually see it as an SMB share. It'll actually see, whack machine name, whack default store, whack foo.jpg. It'll just be a JPEG.
So if I had a Macintosh here, I could see all the Word docs in there?
Yeah, you can.
You'll see that.
Yeah,
see
you would
that.
See this.
Right, you'll
see,
that. You'll see this view of your data. Now, the interesting thing is, for data types that your app doesn't understand, it's kind of like not having the app installed. Like, so if I had a bunch of Word docs on my machine and you didn't have Word installed and you pointed your app at it, Word wouldn't know, or you wouldn't have anything to point at it to have know what to do with it. Same way, we've got some data types on here like contacts or messages or annotations or something that your site can't understand. Then when you double click, it's not going to know what program to go to launch it because you don't have WinFS installed.
Okay.
So you can kind of think about it as not having the app installed. You have to have that installed as well.
Okay.
But the files that are all there are fully accessible by you.
Okay.
So if I decided, oh, I've moved to a WinFS world and I have all these files, I need to give you a Word document, you can still get to that Word document even though you don't have WinFS installed, because from the rest of the world's perspective, it just is a Win32 file system.
Right.
Super important.
Okay. I'm also struggling a little bit. When I load this disk up, what's going to be my experience?
Okay. So this particular application that I'm showing you, the LifeJournal, is just a prototype application that we didn't distribute.
Right.
This experience is inside the shell. As soon as you load up WinFS, you'll be able to see that. And the next application I'll be showing is also an application we put on the disk so that people can be able to explore and play with WinFS as well.
Okay.
So let me actually.
And what's the WinFS-ness of this? Because to me, that just looks like a folder with files in it, right?
This one.
Right.
Yeah. So the important piece here is that we're actually storing a bunch of data that actually isn't files, right? That these are all things that are actually rows and tables that can manifest themselves this way, but because they're in a database, it can manifest themselves multiple ways. It's just one view of my data.
And where is that data stored? Is that stored in that file or in that URL? Or how do I see that? As a developer, how could I crack it open and look at
that? Well, we'll show you the development experience in a minute.
Okay.
But the important thing to remember is what you're looking at on the screen is the Windows XP Explorer. We have a little extension that's plugging into it to interpret the namespace, but what you're seeing is essentially, just as Quentin said, the Win32 file system laid out in directories, file streams, and the names of the items that are in there. That's that integrated relational and file system experience all together.
Okay.
The fact that you can't tell that that's WinFS is kind of a good thing from that point of view.
Yeah.
That tells us that we've got that integration of those things into one world.
Yeah.
And having that's important not just because we have to support existing file types, but because there's an administration model that's also expected here. He could right-click on this, on any of these things, and show you, like, the security properties, right? Because I could secure now my contacts and my Word documents in a folder together in the same way. I can back up my Word documents and my contacts together in one model. That's part of the goals of integrated storage has been around, a central administration model that works. So we've implemented all that. All that stuff is here.
Now, do I back up the Word doc that's inside this WinFS? What do you call this thing?
It's a folder.
It's just a folder.
You're seeing a folder.
Is it a WinFS folder?
No.
Is it any different than an NTFS folder?
No, not.
Okay.
It is and it isn't. I mean, the internal representation of it, of course, is very different than the way NTFS lays out files and folders on a disk.
Okay.
Right? But the external representation to Win32 is the same, which is what's super important, right? To get that backwards compatibility. Where you'll use folders and where you'll use other kinds of associations within WinFS is the more interesting topic. Okay, so great. So now you've gotten over this minimum bar, so I have a central backup model and I can secure things in the same way, etc. I've integrated the data. Now what can I do with it above and beyond what can be done with files and folders? And that's and that's more what the other app you saw is starting to explore some of those concepts.
Yeah.
And the next app we'll show you, StoreSpy, is another way that you can start to look at what that means. So
I'm trying to think of how do I back up my WinFS store?
You can drag the folder over to someplace else, for example.
And all the WinFS stuff comes along with it?
Comes along with it, yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's cool. All right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I had to back up just to
get
a conceptual view of what this is, because it's a little mind-blowing.
You're sort of hitting at one of the big challenges with this project is you've got to take date. You know, people are used to file systems, people are used to databases, and you've got to find one product that simultaneously does both. And so some people come at it looking at it as a file system, and they expect certain things, and some people come at it looking at it as a database, and they expect certain things. And how do you sort of bridge that gap so they get the power of both things? And I think so your questions are very much the ones we're hoping to be able to convey in value propositions to users.
Okay.
So the third one I was going to show here is an application we call StoreSpy. So this is actually an application that Is on the CD, and you can use it.
The first app you showed me is not on the CD? Or
the shell piece is, the LifeJournal one isn't.
Okay.
We'll be demoing that, and we'll work on incorporating that into different applications as we go on.
Okay.
But with this, I wanted to showcase sort of the third value proposition of OneFS, which is explore. And the way to think about it is, we've now got all this data, it's in a database, we've organized it, we have all these relationships, and the thing that a database is really good at that a file system isn't quite as good at is a database has a query processor. What that means is it's got a way to interpret queries that understands relationships. So it understands when you say things like Quentin's query for, you know, show me the people who wrote specs on my team, or show me all the mail from the people who wrote specs on my team. As you start to build up these richer and richer queries, a database knows how to go and say, take these relationships and do this query before you do that query and do this one and then join with that one, and that's what a database is good at. So here I'm just going to just show some queries so we can start to see why OneFS, exploring with OneFS is different than just search.
Okay.
So first off, I'll start here, and there's a set of tabs up here that just show you these are the different types of data that we've put into OneFS.
Okay.
And here I've got a bunch of different data. Let me actually pick one that has a better preview. So let's go down here. So here we've got some contacts. If I go down further, I got a lot of contacts in here. I got some mail, the broken link on it. I've got some pictures. And so I've got all this different data sitting in my store. And the important part is that it's actually schematized, so I can do rich queries on it. So for example, if I click on my messages view, this will go and take all my items and reduce down to the 1,100 odd messages that I have in my store. And I can go do sort of rich queries like, just show me all the mail from Shane. That's something that a lot of search apps can do as well. But the important piece here is that from column is actually a relationship. There's a relationship between a message and a contact, and that's what's showing up here.
Okay.
And the way I can see that is if I click here and say filter by contact, this is the join of all my contacts with all these messages. Right?
Wow.
And so these are all the people I've received mail from. So let's use that to build up some interesting queries.
All the people you receive mail from in this list,
which
is already filtered by a folder or something.
Right.
So anywhere else he's done filtering, it obviously joins down to that result.
Okay. Right, exactly. So let's go build up some more interesting queries. So I'm going to flip over to meetings view. And so these are all a bunch of different meetings that we've had. And I'm going to go and say, show me just the meetings in the last 30 days.
You're working on a calendar view for that, aren't you?
Yeah, we'll get a better view in there soon. And the attendees column is just like the message from column. It's a join column. So I can click here and I can say filter by contact. And this is the list of people that I've met with in the last 30 days.
Yep.
And this isn't a bunch of strings or something that I've tagged in there. This is actually real contacts that I've met with in the last 30 days.
Right.
And that's important because I'm going to be able to use that as I go and build the next step of my query. So what I can do is I can take that list of people I met with in the last 30 days,
yep,
and I can save that query off. And it'll actually say, and I'll annotate it so we can see these things as we go back around. So people I met with in the last 30 days. And I'm going to build one more of these queries. We can do something fun at the end here. So I'm going to build train. So this is actually one of the data sets we have on here is from one of the guys on the team that's an avid cyclist.
Yeah.
And so he does these training rides where he actually takes out a bunch of folks and they go training before they have a big cycling ride. And what he does is he just sends them off little events and says, hey, we're going to go training. And sometimes he invites one set of people, sometimes he invites another. And now he can go and say, just find me all the training events, take the attendees of those events, and I can say, these are all the people that I trained with.
Yeah.
Right? So I can go save off that list as well and say channel 9 people I trained with. Okay. So now I've got these little, we call them auto lists. They're saved queries that we've saved off. But the important part is that they're actually typed. They're not just filters, right?
Okay.
So now let me switch back to my messages view.
And by typed, he means you can go back to the system, you can ask it for, give me all the lists that return people.
Right.
And those things will come back, and so they're reusable by other apps. So I can apply that same filter now to a group of photographs or to my mail or to my contact or to my calendar, which is what he's about to show.
Right. So if we go back here, we're now back in our messages view. So this from column is of type contact, you can think about it that way. Right. And so I could do the filter by contacts. These are all people that have sent me mail.
Yep.
But I can also do filter by lists of contacts. So these are all people who have these are all queries that return people. right? So I can actually go in here and say things like, show me the mail from the people I met with in the last 30 days.
Yep.
And the cool part here is not just that I can go form that query and say it went down from 1,100 to 685. But the cool part is not just I can form that query once, but that's actually a standing query. So if I rerun this query tomorrow, it's going to be a different set of people. Or if I go out a meeting in, it's going to be a different set
wow.
of people. And you can imagine we're actually going to do this really cool demo as a PDC where we do this with CRM data. So you can imagine you go into your CRM application, which knows nothing about your mail application, and say, these are my high priority customers. Any customer with revenue greater than $1 million and where I have a meeting with them in the next month or whatever. And I can go say, show me the mail from my high priority customers. And so somebody else, one of my sales guys, goes off and updates my customer list and adds an opportunity for somebody else. Then my mail feels like it self-organizes. Right? That's one of the nice powers of having a relational database, is that it almost makes you feel like your data is organizing itself. Right?
Yeah.
And it's one of the big challenges with a lot of the more annotation, tagging-oriented systems is all that data is not shared between apps, so you end up with, you have to repeat it everywhere you go. Right? This
right.
is a picture of my family, but I defined who my family was in this other application where I decided that this group of people is going to be my family. I need that information to be shared. Right? And so the last thing I can
hold on a second.
Happens to everyone.
Yeah. Turn off my phone. Sorry
yeah,
about that.
That's all right.
So.
But the idea is that all these queries I've been building up are actually items in the store. So if I flip back here to my all items view, and I just go query here and say, show me all things for channel 9. And oops, I lost focus. Channel 9. It should go find these are the two queries we built up. And so these are just sitting in the store right next to everything else, which means
yeah.
that my other applications can reason about these too. So if I flip back to LifeJournal now, we have this little button up here that says, we have a search button that does your regular search. OneFS is good at that too. But I have this related to button that goes and finds all queries that are in the system.
Yep.
And I can go say, show me everything related to people I trained with. And this will not just go find those people, but all things related to those people. So for example, here I've got a set of pictures, and I've got a set of mails that come back, and somewhere back here I'll have some events. The idea is that every one of these applications can go reuse data from one app to the other, and you can start to build up these queries and explore these relationships in innovative ways.
Cool, huh?
Mind-blowing, actually.
Glad you liked it.
You can really see a time base. What you've done is add a time to the database and added some other views onto
yeah, you've taken all
yeah.
your data.
This is just
one view.
We're just prototyping some stuff here. Imagine
yeah.
what happens when, no offense to my UI friends here in the division, when real developers start to build user experiences around this stuff.
Yeah.
The example that he gave around CRM apps where I go in somewhere in my CRM app and I say, this is the profile for these super high priority customers. I get to reuse that in terms of dealing with my mail, dealing with my calendar, etc. Like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, holy crap. Like, the power of being able to do those kinds of things is enormous. This is just one example. I mean, he's just solving some, like, how I keep track of all the stuff with these particular buddies I play, you know, I'm cycling with. The example I use is playing poker. That's why
yeah.
I started
yeah.
going down that path. But imagine that really in the business world. Or imagine that for consumers, where people are taking, you know, photographs of their family and their kids and all that stuff, get to apply these same kinds of constructs. Wow. Right? Imagine the UI built on that. It'd be very powerful.
Very cool.
So the fourth big value prop, so we walked through three, unify, organize, explore. The fourth one is what we call innovate. And we'd say one of the big reasons you build a file system on a database is that now you have a real data store that's available to applications. And
right.
you know, one of the things we noticed as we were building OneFS, you just look around Microsoft and forget the rest of the world, the number of products that have built their own data stores is just mind-numbing, right? You got MDB and MNY and PST and OST, and I mean, you can just, more often than not, people have built their own data stores on top of the file system, and the thing shows up in a file system like a single file. So a big piece of what we're doing here is give people a real data platform in Windows that they can use instead of building their own.
Right.
So we're going to bring Sam up to show some coding examples for what that looks like.
So you got your own little laptop there?
Yeah, okay. This is my own little dev box.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll let him take the chair.
Cool. If you can, flip it away from the window. There you go.
There we go. So I'm going to just walk through some of the sort of Flintstone-level coding examples here.
Is that a new dev profile?
Yeah, that
is
a new dev
Einstein
profile.
Flintstone.
Yeah, so we're not going to do anything as complicated as some of the dynamic querying and typing that happens as a result of LifeJournal, but...
Okay.
And in fact, the code samples here are brought from the, I think, the first or second exercise that we bring people through in our hands-on lab.
Okay. And so you're going to do a hands-on lab at the PDC?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people should come by and drop by and
please.
See.
Please.
Absolutely.
Okay. More the better.
So we sold out the PDC last week.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. We're very excited.
Yeah.
So WinFest lives in this system-less storage namespace, and what I'm going to do here is walk through a connection. And so we provide a typed connection, this WinFS data. And in this parameterless constructor, we're just going to bring up the default store. And we're going to do something very straightforward. We're going to go into the store. We're going to grab all of the people in the store, all the persons, that is. And we're just going to, for each of those persons, we're going to grab them out of the store. We're going to pull out a couple of properties and print them out.
Okay.
Really Flintstone little stuff. So we're going to build that. And then I'll walk through the code. And so you can see that we run the little sample, and we're going to pull out the people in the store. And, of course, this is sort of a dummy store. So we have Mickey Mouse, Porky Pig, Mighty Mouse, Roger Rabbit, Bugs Bunny. You can imagine.
All Sam's best friends.
All my best friends. My imaginary best friends. And we're pulling out their birth date as well as their name. And that's what you see in those columns there.
All right.
Simple stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look at the code here, we've given you this typed connection, which knows that it's grabbing onto a WinFS data connection. And then down here, we're going to construct a storage searcher that is strongly typed for person. And what that means is that the type of the storage searcher knows that you're going to pull person objects out of it.
Okay.
And we're going to get those person objects by going into the WinFS data connection, going into, notionally at least, the items table, and then filtering by that type, person, okay?
Okay.
So this is a sort of strongly typed connection pattern that is new to WinFS, although we'll be making this kind of API pattern available across the line of databases that we do here. The next thing you'll notice is that we go into the for each, and we just throw this strongly typed storage searcher in, and we pull person objects out of it. Now, the storage searcher implements an interface called IEnumerable, which means that the C# operator for each, therefore, knows how to iterate over that collection. So I don't have to do like a SQL command execute statement.
Right.
It just pulls it right out of the for each loop. So that's just an extra line of code gone. And as we pull those objects out, like I said, it's strongly typed. So we don't have to cast them to person objects. They're already person objects. And then we go in the middle of the loop, and we pull out the formatted name from the full name, and we pull out the birth date, write them out, and we're done. Like I said, Flintstoneware, but we've got a couple of new concepts in there. It makes it really worth
really
going
easy.
Through.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One of the things we like to say is, in some ways, it's about we're going to bring together a database and a file system. In a lot of ways, just like users are going to be using this database, and hopefully none of them ever know it. We're hoping that developers are going to start to use databases in a way that they potentially will never know that they're using a database and getting the real power of a query processor and so on. They still write objects, and all WinFS items are CLR objects, one of the very important properties of this, but they're actually getting the real power of a query processor as they're writing all that code. It's a very powerful concept.
What are a few things developers need to know, you know, starting out using this system?
Well, there are really two things. One is that we strongly schematize all of the items that appear in the store. Okay, and by strongly schematize, we mean that when you look at a contact, there's a schema to it. There's a specific schema to it. And the second thing you need to know is that that schema is actually incarnated, as Shashir said, as a regular old CLR object with properties and links and collections and just like you would think of. And the pattern that we have is you grab this WinFS data connection, you grab the objects that you're interested in, you make changes to those objects, and then you save them back into the store.
Okay.
So to a CLR programmer, there's not much to learn other than you end with that save changes that actually, you know, for the database geeks in the crowd, that actually commits the underlying transaction, uses optimistic concurrency. If you really need, you know, fine-grained control, you can dive into the connection, do all the usual things that you can do with that. But most programmers who are programming at this level don't need to go into all of that database-y kind of detail.
Okay.
Now, having said that about strongly schematized, let me bring up a little tool that we ship for developers on the disk. This is the WinFS type browser. And what this lets you do, and I apologize about the font, it's a little fine-grained there, is this actually lets you dive into the types that the system knows about and explore the properties and relationships that are available in those types. So you can see on the left that we've gone into the default store, and these are the names of all of the types that we know about, system.storage.calendar, system.storage.contacts, Under the contacts family in that namespace, we have a few items. One of them is contact, one of them is organization, one of them is person. We go into person, and you can see on the right-hand side that we have a little ER diagram of both the methods that are available on person, the properties that they have there, and the more complicated, the nested types that are part of that, or inline types we call them. And so you can see that we have a person contact, and then over as an inline type of person, we have the full name. And the full name has a formatted name, there's a given name, middle name, nickname, pronunciation, suffix, surname, title, etc. A lot of things you'd expect to have on a name object. But if you wanted to just see what was available in a store, in a live store that you were connected to, you can browse around this thing, and you can follow these cards out, and it lays it out, and you can bring these things down.
I think I asked this a year and a half ago, but if I was a developer on the outside, I'd be like, this is a 1.0 product, and I'm really sketchy on using anything from Microsoft that's 1.0 product, right?
I certainly empathize with that position. And it is and it isn't. I mean, the relational engine we're building on, of course, is at this point very mature, very sophisticated. And UConn is, you know, tangibly close to releasing.
It's a version 9 product.
Yeah. And the CLR now, we're on now, you
version
know,
3.
Version 3 effectively of that. And the file system that we're integrating to, and how we've actually built WinFS. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they track the version numbers of NTFS, but that thing's also very mature.
Yeah.
And that's part of where some of these other projects do have started to kind of broken their pick in the past, is that too much stuff was just too new. Here, we're actually building on all the stuff that's actually very mature and very far along. We're just cobbling it together different than has ever been done before.
Boiling the ocean here. You're trying to do some very specific things.
That's exactly
right. We're digging canals more than we're boiling an ocean.
Okay.
Yeah. And where we do have that sort of 1.0 innovation flavors, okay, what exactly is a relationship model, and okay, what does the query language there exactly look like, and it's those sort of point problems as opposed to, boy, we've got to figure out how to support file system-y things, and boy, we've got to build a database while we're at it, and boy, we've got to build constructs like one of the things we take advantage of in the CLR is partial types,
right?
Partial classes, rather, where we can, when you give us a schema, we can give you a set of types for the getters and setter methods, but you can also come along and add additional stuff to those same things, but in the end, you get one class.
Yeah.
Imagine doing that without the CLR.
Wow.
Like 10 years ago. How would you even go about doing that, right? So we have all these technologies now that we can use to solve a lot of really hard problems. So we can focus on just the particular challenges around what the programming experience needs to be, what the data model needs to be, etc.
Right.
There are just more powerful tools in the environment that we're trying to do this in.
Okay. The other probably end user. Concern I'd have is, what happens if my file gets corrupted? What, you know, or can that happen? You know, this is not a Microsoft thing; it's an Apple thing. I interviewed Steve Wozniak, and he told me about the original days of the Apple, and his wife lost an entire thesis paper. Right?
Yeah.
So
well,
it's possible.
The advantage in how we've built
things
it,
go messy with computers.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. The advantage of how we built it is that your files are stored in somewhere within NTFS. So there's a level of recovery there. We start out knowing, and I've got to go back to the comment I made some time ago about, you know, zero DBAs, 100 million users, 200 million users, 300 million users, depending on when you're counting. Yeah.
Lots of people.
So we start out from the very beginning saying, this thing has to be, you know, we have to have these fundamentals towards reliability, backup, and all that stuff built in from the very beginning. So, you made the comment, well, what if I wanted to, like, put this data somewhere else? And I said, you can just pick up the folder and move it. That's not some trivial thing. Like, we had to design that kind of support in from the very beginning. The ability to back up things at the file and item level has been built in from the beginning. We've also done a lot of innovative work around recovery. So in the database world, there's a couple of these, you know, data pages that if you corrupt them, let's just forget the files, just the database world and sort of the database files, you corrupt these couple of pages, your database is pretty much screwed up. And, you know, in the database world, people know what those pages are, they back them up very carefully, DBAs know about them, they know how to restore them, and all this stuff. We don't have that luxury of DBAs. We've done more work to figure out what are the things we need to back up, where do we put them on the platter in NTFS, how do we recover from them, how do we know automatically that those things have been corrupted so that we can restore them. Matter of fact, we have this really cool demo where you know, someone will sit there in a command line, just do a dir, and you'll see all these files and items go by, just like you saw in the shell there. And then we run this tool that goes in and screws around with the bits and bytes on a page. And then you do a dir, and like the directory's like the stuff's gone. It's just disappeared.
Yeah.
And then you wait around like another 20 seconds, you do a dir, and it's all back. And it's like underneath the covers, we've recognized the page corruption, we've restored it from a backup that was taken, and we've online put things back in the right order. Like all of a sudden the covers. Right. So for an end user that does have one of these, you know, pages go south on them, they'll just hit F5 and all of a sudden the stuff will be back and they'll be like, oh, that was weird.
Yeah.
And life moves on. And of course,
do you guys trust this thing?
Yeah. We've fired data in there. Yeah, the reliability, that whole thing, I mean, the good news is we're building this out of the database team. Like, the performance, you know, data reliability, recovery, all that stuff is just part of their DNA. It's just part of their DNA. We don't have to teach them, oh, no, we need to make this thing reliable. We need to make the thing secure. It's in the DNA.
Mentioned another word. Are we going to see a whole new range of weird attacks or viruses on this thing?
You know, I think any time you put surface area out there, people look for ways to prod into it. Until WinFS is really ubiquitous, it has become attractive, right, in some ways. But we've taken in antivirus and all this stuff in from the very beginning. These are, part of the whole attitude around we're taking this technology, bringing it to 200 million users, and how much in a better position we are sort of culturally the company now to deal with that problem as we may have been some time ago. We're taking all this stuff into account.
Hey, you guys have done threat modeling.
It's part of our spec sign-offs. It's part of our milestone work. I mean, it is part of the culture of the team to worry about that stuff.
Yeah,
that's been...
The company, I've been talking to some... we hired a former guy from Lotus, security guy from Lotus, and he said he was very surprised at how much the company had changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge change in the past 3-4 years, from where we were. So we've taken all stuff all in from the beginning. We've done extensive threat modeling across the entire product, even for beta 1. Now, we haven't gone and addressed everything we thought about. We have subsequent betas and time to do all that. But nonetheless, we understand very deeply what that landscape looks like and what we need to continue to do.
So beta 1 is here on the disk. Are you guys talking about a roadmap yet of when this thing will get out to mom and dad?
Yeah, not really. I mean, we're sort of taking our time, right? And that was part of what we decided to do as we went through the changes with Longhorn / Windows Vista last August, and we decided WinFS would not be in that delivery vehicle. So we're releasing the beta now so we can get early feedback. It's a limited beta because we know it's not, baked uniformly across the whole surface area.
So how do you get it? MSDN Universal?
MSDN, yeah.
MSDN. Or MSDN subscriptions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think any of the MSDN subscriptions it works for. And then we'll have, more betas as time goes by. We'll still be in beta by the time Windows Vista ships. We're not promising any different timeline than we realized a year ago. And we'll RTM sometime after there. I mean, it won't take... We'll have a version that is deployed on XP and Windows Vista between Windows Vista and the next major release of the Windows client. But we don't know exactly when that is, so we're still kind of biding our time here a little bit. The other thing that we talked about last August in terms of the time frame was that we had to make sure that we were aligning ourselves to the other work in the database space. Because again, we're using one relational engine kernel, so we want to make sure that we had the ability to minimize the friction in terms of different work needing for there, et cetera. So there's some amount of alignment with WinFS to whatever the next generation of SQL Server becomes after SQL Server 2005. So again, when we figure all that stuff out, we'll talk about that more.
Right.
I think in particular, you can see it really in that we're trying to line up the programming models. A lot of the things we learned as we took WinFS out and talked to developers is that we had created something where it was fairly easy to get up to speed on, but it looked a little bit different from what people were expecting from a database product.
Right.
And so we've taken a step towards sort of rationalizing the traditional SQL Server development models and the new WinFS innovation, which is good for our programming model overall because we get that new source of innovation and all the sort of time-tested and the stuff that traditional database guys need today. And that's part of that fine line we're walking between trying to unify those two worlds of, Windows file systems and file guys and the database guys and the power of the query processor and all that stuff.
Right. That message store you showed me earlier, how did you get that? That's not a PST file, right? That's
The messages he showed in Store Spy?
Yeah, how do you guys get
that's
that
actually,
into there?
So Quentin talked a little bit earlier about synchronization, how we're building it from the ground up. And one of the things we talk about in terms of why applications build their own stores is because they got to move data in and out of them, so how to build PST and OST. So that's actually using synchronization and treating WinFS as if it were a PST or an OST, right? You can almost view it as if you've used Exchange Cache mode. You can think about WinFS playing that same role, that you synchronize under the covers, and the app just looks at the local data and says, these are all the messages, and under the covers we're synchronizing that back and forth with Exchange.
Right.
And so we think that the ability to do that cache mode experience is really important, both for I want a disconnect experience, I want to unplug the network cable, that thing wasn't running on a network at all, or I want to really have high-performant access to my data locally, and something that Outlook 2003 is really good at. But we want all applications to be able to do that easily. Right? We don't want just Outlook to be the only app that would work. I mean, we go around and you could build a CRM app where you could see way more data than you could ever see in a mail store, and I want to be able to see it fast, and I want to be able to disconnect easily, and so on. So right from the ground up, we've built with this synchronization capability. So we'll do change tracking, we'll do conflict management, we'll do resolving changes, applying changes. We'll handle knowledge, so we understand if things are multi-master, if there's multiple different people that think they own the truth for this data, will help reconcile the differences. So sort of right from the ground up, it's built with the idea it's a distributed store.
Okay. We have about 10 more minutes. Did you have any more demo? Or?
Yeah, there's a couple other things I was hoping to
go on.
Two things, really. So we go into this next example, and
yeah.
We're into something a little bit more complicated, which is that we're going to go into our store with those person types. And here, instead of sort of grabbing each person object individually and then filtering and enumerating through them and filtering off some properties, we're actually going to ask the database to go ahead and do that projection for us. So you'll be able to see here, we're going to create this time a storage record object instead of a person type. And I'll get back to why that's important. We're going to go into our contact folder, and for all the items that are in our contact folder, we're going to filter those by person. So we're going to grab all the person things, and then we're going to project out a couple of properties. And you'll see here, we're going to grab the full name of that person, the formatted full name of that person, and we're going to give an alias of name, and we're just going to grab the birth date property itself. Okay? And this projection concept will be pretty familiar to SQL guys, but what this means for folks is that we don't have to grab all of the objects for all of the contexts. We can just get this very focused thing out of the database. And then we're going to go enumerate those storage records. And this time, the storage records, instead of actually giving you those strongly typed person objects, are actually going to give you this storage record type, and we're going to be able to index that by the name of the columns that we've given it from the projection statement. Okay?
Very cool.
And so we'll run this guy, and in this one, we're going to get out the projection here. These are properties of contact within a specific folder. And if we wanted to add something, we could, for example, if I go back and check the type browser for person, and I went back up to full name, that's okay. We could see that, in fact, the full names not just have forename, but let's say I need to know the surname as a separate field. So I can pick the surname out by going and adding it to my projection. And then I can go down here, add a little spacing. And I can dynamically add that to my projection.
Now, do you need to learn a new language to work with the WinFS engine? Or
so the language that I'm showing here, this is all C# code. So you can see that as opposed to last run, we actually added the surname here off at the end of the birth date. So you can see that the main programming language here is just C#. You can use Visual Basic if you want. But this string here is actually a fragment of a string-based query language called OPATH. And OPATH was an experimental query language that we used. We had in PDC-03, mm-hmm. Used to be part of a product called Object Spaces that we use that gives us a more natural navigation pattern over the objects and the kind of relationships that you see as part of the object graphs. We are working towards a query language that is more based off of the traditional SQL model for release. And although we're showing a path in this preview, that was part of the feedback that we started to get. We'd had some of this feedback back in PDC 03, and it's come out more strongly even in the last year as we've talked to developers, is that SQL is just, for all its idiosyncrasies, it's just got a real stronghold in the community. It's much easier to refer to people with less training, et cetera. So we're going to move away from this old path into something a little more SQL-based. But the basic capabilities and the expressiveness of the language and the ability to do this kind of navigation amongst the parts of the objects will all remain there.
Now, when developers get Beta 1, where should they go for more information?
So we have...
So there's going to be a set of news groups that are up where people can go for asking regular questions.
I was going to the help file first.
The help file, right? The help file is actually really good. Then there's the news groups. We'll be running a OneFS blog, which is blogs at msdn.com/OneFS, the team blog. And they can always email us and email you, I'm sure.
They come to the PDC.
Yeah,
right. Regarding books,
the PDC.
They have it.
Yeah,
exactly.
A little tight, but the SDK and the documentation is actually
really good.
Fairly extensive. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, the docs are actually really good.
Cool.
So there's one slightly more complicated example I was going to walk through here.
All right. We
have
4 minutes. So.
Okay, I'll go fast. So we can see down here. Let me get rid of my control flow. Sorry, almost ready for that. So you can see through here, what we're going to do now is we're going to create a slightly more complicated filter, which is to say we're going to go into the contact folder, and we're going to grab the person objects, and then we're going to filter those, and this sample looks for things that have a display name, like this first parameter, Mickey, and have a birth date that's older than January 1st, 2000. And again, you can see the OPATH segment in here, and the @0 and the @1 are use of positional parameters so that you can create these fragments and then sort of supply parameters as you go. It's a pretty traditional database pattern. So if I compile this and run it, you'll see that we have the pronouns from a previous exercise, then you go down at the bottom. And in fact, we have a name like Mickey, and of course, he was born, at least in this database, he was born in 1954. Whoever this Mickey Mouse might happen to be.
Yep.
So let's muck with this a little bit. So first of all, let's make it a little more inclusive. We'll make this an OR statement instead of an AND statement. And let's make this, I'm more of a Pepe Le Pew fan myself. And we'll go ahead and compile that. And if we run that sucker, it'll come out. And now, in fact, we've got a much bigger list. Oh, I didn't change the date, right?
That's okay.
Right, so now everybody, it turns out, of course, is born between 2000, so that OR is going to give me everybody, and it wouldn't give me Pepe Le Pew either way. And then I'm just going to show one final example. This is sort of the extra credit from our lab. This is a much more complicated...
So don't cheat and look at this and do it.
Yeah, exactly. If you watch this video, you don't get extra credit in the lab.
All right.
This is a more complicated query statement, and again, we're bringing people out. And we're doing a join over a couple of extents, which we then filter by these equality statements. And this gives us, from our little database, people who share the same birthday filtering out the duplicates.
Right. Okay.
And I won't walk through the details because I don't want to give too much away for the lab.
Okay. Very cool.
Cool.
Well, thanks for showing that WinFS is back, right?
Yeah. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah. And, is there anything else that we need to know? I think we've covered pretty much the waterfront. We've seen some cool demos.
Beta 1, got the SDK, got the blog, news groups, coming to PDC. Keep your eye on us.
Let us know what
help
you
us
think.
Get some feedback.
Yeah.
Write some great apps.
It's been the feedback that's...
Write some great apps.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool stuff. So, thanks. I'm speechless. Thanks.